Welcome along. That lad from the English Midlands hasn't done much since moving to La Liga, has he? Hardly heard a thing about him. But then Villarreal have struggled, I guess. Now, Jude Bellingham, he has been great. Stop the voting for the Ballon d'Or unless we wait and give it to him after England win the Euros, assuming Southgate doesn't drop him and squeeze another defensive midfielder in. Actually, I should be very careful about criticising managers. It's commercially sensitive information in the sacking season. Winning the Europa League and rescuing a club from relegation only buys you a couple of months now. Mendilibar out. The best available managers have already had a crack at Sevilla. But don't worry, Victor Orta's on the case. Can someone Google Rafa Benitez before I carry on, please? The Celta manager is still in a job. He is still in a job. Despite collecting 2 points from 3 games with Alaves, Las Palmas and Getafe, he blamed the VAR on Monday. You can take the man out of Liverpool, but you can't take Liverpool out of the man.
Ooh, agreed. Controversial.
Don't leave us. Granada were also left fuming with the VAR refs, anyone but themselves, as Barcelona came from 2 down to get a draw. If you have not seen Jose Callejon's attempt to win a free kick in the build-up to the equaliser, please check it out. And then join our fundraiser for acting lessons. He's been watching Marx Brothers movies. Or maybe João Félix is the prime Mike Tyson and floored him with an amazing bit of strength. It was a weekend of refereeing controversy, a phrase which always has to be weighed against player stupidity. There was a lot of refereeing stuff to get our head around. Oh, where do you want to start with that Barcelona? It was fun. It was a bit shambolic at times.
Fun.
Yeah, they sort of got away with it in a way, and that they got a point. They could have had 3 if. But for another, actually, there's nothing controversial about the being no free kick in the build up to the second goal. Let's do that one. Let's do Callejon trying to win a free kick.
Well, you say they got away with Barcelona. They didn't. They should have been Granada, the team that only had 5 points before the game. They've been defensively a bit awful this year. But they shut up shop with the back five, a midfield four, and Lucas Boye out front that does cause teams problems. I think he's a really good player.
Yeah.
Lucas Boye, and in that team as well, where they're playing from deep, they don't play that way all the time. Hence the reason they conceded loads of goals. But against Barcelona, came up with a plan.
And goal after 17 seconds helps the plan, doesn't it?
And do you know what? I needed that game last night because it's tough going watching all these matches over the weekend. And the Real Madrid game was on live, so you have to schedule that. Trying to watch some Premier League stuff, trying to Premier Match of the Day, watch a bit of NFL. Oh my God, I felt sluggish this morning, so just been to the gym to try and shake that off. But just as long as people know what we go through in order to come up and watch all
the
games
join the
before
Patreon.
We record on a Monday morning. So I needed that lively game last night, and that woke me up straight away. I was feeling jaded 20 seconds into the game, and the Barcelona had kickoff as well. They had kickoff, went back into midfield, risky pass, cut out, and Zaragoza, who's a player we're going to need to talk about. He's been called up to the Spain squad alongside Ansu Fati, and we'll probably address that as well. But Zaragoza, he's 22. He's been at Granada, say, all his career. He's made the breakthrough at Granada, come through the youth system. And he's a real a tricky player. Skillful, likes to run at players. A bit of a street player, which I always like. But he's got some talent. And he's going to be a hard one for Granada to keep hold of. And he took both his goals well. But when you say Barcelona got away with it, they shouldn't be dropping points at Granada. Should be a win. But it's a place they've had troubles with in the past. And, you know, difficult games, they've got away with wins and stuff. And they've had to make other comebacks there in the past. But it was a disjointed performance from Barcelona. And I'll try to explain why. I've never seen a team play so many 1-2s around the penalty area, and none of them worked. And it was just constant. And they went narrow. They didn't play with any width, apart from Lamine Yamal. It looked like a tactic from Xavi, where everybody was congregated in. They Koundé and Christensen are the only two that stay back, which is admirable. Cancelo goes and plays in a midfield role now, inside. So he's not playing right back and he's not playing right midfield. So he plays Cancelo, Gundogan, Gavi and Balde, like another four, but with no one on the right. And that's where the width comes from, Lamine Yamal. On the left, Balde didn't really get forward as much as you would like. And it was difficult. Then you have Fermín López was playing central. Ferran Torres was central. João Félix was central. And I kind of feel they played into the hands of Granada a little bit because there was no width. And they constantly kept trying to go through the middle. And it was, I mean, frustrating is the wrong word, but I was confused as to why they kept that tactic, cramming the central area of attack against a team that were playing five at the back, not three, five at the back, a four in midfield. So that meant that they were, you know, in midfield numbers, Gonzalo Villa and Gerard Gumbel were in there, and it was clogged up as well. There was just nowhere to go for Barcelona. And they showed their frustration, Barcelona, by then trying to commit. And they had lots of patient build-up and lots of play in the attacking half. But there was one or two signs last night that you can clearly play that. Mallorca and Getafe showed you sit deep. Barcelona found it hard to break through, particularly without Lewandowski. But you can hit them quickly on the break. And it's a bit of a surprise, to be honest, that Barcelona are conceding as many goals as they are this season. And Ter Stegen barely made a save last night, and he conceded two goals. Yeah. So I think last year for him was extraordinary, where he was getting them out of trouble. And I'm not blaming him for the goals conceded this season, but there's a big difference in the amount of chances teams are creating and taking this season against Barcelona, and they're being punished. And
he was massively outperforming his stats last year, wasn't he, on his save stats? I'll look it up. I think he's probably not, would be my guess, this year.
And I'm not looking at the obvious errors from Ter Stegen. They're just someone's threw a belt.
He's slap bang in the middle, so 0.4. Las Palmas are best, actually, in Sevilla, which we'll get to worse in terms of... It's reasonably significant, isn't it? He bailed them out a lot last season. There were defensive problems last season, and he bailed them out. And so far, he hasn't been able to bail them out.
There was games last year, John, where you're looking and thinking, how have they kept a clean sheet? The other teams should have scored three or four. I can remember Celta Vigo, in particular, at the Camp Nou, and it was, how have they kept a clean sheet? There was like three one-on-ones, and people unmarked and at the far post and missing a header and missing the target and stuff like that. That just thinned that up. So last season was extraordinary, and it won them the league. They're going to have to do it a different way this season unless they tighten things up at the back. So there's a few dilemmas there for Xavi to unravel.
One of our Patreons made a point about Cancelo at right back. Philip's conclusion was that for the Clásico, he'd rather actually leave out Cancelo for all of his obvious attacking qualities and play Araujo, because he'll be up against... We'll get to how Real Madrid set up later, but he'll be up against Vinicius.
Good setup,
With Bellingham coming that side a lot as well, which we'll get to. So has he got a point? Is Cancelo... It's not the individual, is it? It's the role that he plays. Is that too dangerous for massive games?
I think you have to bear in mind it's the home game for Barcelona, so the onus will be on them to attack and try to win the game. So Xavi won't want to make too many concessions, but we've seen in the past he plays Araujo right back against Vinicius, so it wouldn't be a massive surprise if he does that again. And we'll come to Real Madrid a bit later about where Vinicius is playing. And it's a trend. I see a lot of teams playing now, and it's Pep's fault again. I blame him for the playing out of the penalty box in the past when Barcelona did it successfully. Now everyone copies it, tries to do it. Yeah. And if you've got good players, you can do it. If you haven't got particularly good players, you can't do it. It's as simple as that. And he started the fullbacks playing going into a midfield position. And I see it so often now where there's keeping holes in defences, and you're thinking, well, where's the fullback? And I wouldn't mind it if he was bombing on down the wing and his team lost possession and he got caught out and he was struggling to get back. But you look at them and you think, oh, the right back's in central midfield. He's not even given a moment's thought to helping the two centre halves out. And so Cancelo does fall into that category. And I just explained where he played most of his game last night was right side of central midfield. And it does leave space. So that will be something. So it's not wide right in a 4-4-2. It's almost like the traditional 4-3-3, it's like he's one of those three. So there is space. And teams, you know, if teams do play that on a regular basis, opponents will recognise that and they will exploit the width on that side of the pitch. Balde is your traditional attacking fullback. He'll stay wide. He gets up and down the pitch. And a lot of times, you know, there are fullbacks that play further up the pitch and give the whip to the attack. I get all that.
It's when they go into midfield, you've got to show so much intelligence to recognise when the ball might be turned over and you need to get back into an orthodox fullback position. Cancelo doesn't.
What's the advantage of that? I believe we refer to them as inverted fullbacks.
Yeah, numerical superiority.
Domination in midfield,
central midfield.
Yeah.
But of which a lot of opponents won't be too bothered about because they just have numbers back behind the ball, like they do against Barcelona, like Getafe did, like Mallorca did, and like Granada did. And you can crowd your midfield and there won't be an awful lot of space. It cramps Barcelona's style of play as well and the fact that everyone tucks in and is playing in a central position.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how it develops. I don't mind it. There are times when it can be used, but then other players have got to recognise that the right back might not be in his usual position when the ball is turned over.
Yeah. So for Patreons, so you pay your money. You get to see me stealing stuff from ass.com. That's Cancelo.
That's not your classic heat map would for a right back attacking like he is would be pretty much in a straight line.
Yeah.
From the right down the right flank all the way. But you can see a lot of that is it drifts in towards the centre circle.
Yeah, so a lot of touches. So, I mean, some touches, that's in the left channel, that one there, isn't it? Which is fair enough, the odd one, isn't it? Yeah,
of course. It might be from a corner.
Yeah.
And he might be one of those players that's defending and runs back and stuff like that. But there's
a lot of touches. But the bulk of it is like a number eight, isn't it? That's where
Exactly. And the space will be exploited by teams that recognise that.
Yeah.
So you're talking about teams doing their analysis. Yeah, that's your classic.
So that's Balde on the left. Straight up and down that left channel. Yeah, so that's more. Yeah, so one's inverted, one's not.
Yeah.
So,
and if you're talking about analytics, Real Madrid probably have a decent.
Yeah, it's not just a bloke looking on ass.com. Yeah, yeah.
That they will be looking at that.
Yeah,
and we'll come to that. It's going to be a feature of the game, that side of the pitch where Cancelo plays them when I explain when we talk about Real Madrid's tactics.
Yes. Right, so have we described Callahan falling
over?
You need to tell us. Yeah, it's ludicrous.
I mean, there's two players down on the floor, isn't there?
Yeah, because the first one, João Félix gives Vallejo a little push, doesn't he? And it's a little push.
Yeah.
That one, I'm thinking, could they see that as a foul? Because it's not enough to push him
initially,
over.
Initially, I thought, there's two down.
I don't know how they were two down. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we didn't see it. Something's happened off the ball. Albert Ferreira and commentary said they'd done the wrong thing. They tried to cheat. And they ended up with two players on the floor when Barcelona scored a goal. Yeah. And basically, Vallejo goes down, then gets up.
Yeah.
So that it was almost like the next phase of play, wasn't it? So when VAR were looking at it, I'm thinking, well, that happened, nothing was given, and play continued for another 30 seconds before the next foul off the ball
30,
that we hadn't
still,
seen. There was a little bit of a dip.
Callahan more or less sees that and then runs over, doesn't he, to João
Félix. He runs into the back of João Félix, doesn't even know he's there. He runs in and slams him in the back with a bit of a shoulder barge, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then throws
and
himself
then
on the
over.
Floor, holding his face. But in fairness, we didn't see that initially. We just saw, Callahan's down. João Félix, is he throwing an arm out? Is he going to be disallowed? When you see it, it's comical. And players, I've said it a week or so, it might have been last week podcast, we've got to start nailing players that do that.
Yeah.
I mean, Cancelo got booked. He could have got sent off. He had a little sly little flick out as off the ball when the players were running back towards goal. I can't remember who it was against, but it might be Miguel Angel. And then he goes down as if he's in like Polex, and you're thinking at very worst, that was a tap on the calf, the ankle.
Yeah.
Those sort of things we need to eradicate from the game. And it's not just in La Liga, I saw it happening in the Premier League at the weekend. And I can't see why there isn't a retrospective. Oh, even at the time, VAR looking at it and going, he's conning you to the referee in his ear, book him.
Yeah.
Because you should punish the team they're playing.
I agree.
The advantage to go to the team that's playing against those cheats rather than
someone
being
else.
Suspended for another game and they miss a game and because he cheated and got his fifth yellow and stuff
but
like that.
If you're watching a Getafe game, The VAR will be just running the whole game, won't they? If you, that's the problem, isn't it?
Well, that stop them in there. They would stop put a stop to it though, wouldn't it? If you know,
or but if you just do player, retrospective suspensions, that would stop it in the end, wouldn't it? I get your point about
anything to stop it.
You don't get the benefit from that cheating, but if you looked afterwards, it would be a big job at the moment, wouldn't it? Because they're all at it.
I used to think that way when we didn't have VAR.
Yeah.
Someone could have a look at a panel of ex-players, referees combined, look at these allegations on a Monday morning and come up with, no, he's feigned in, you dived there.
I mean, yeah, that's the only one got sent off for Spurs. With respect to you and your colleagues, that I would have ex-players. I wouldn't have ex-players in the bar room. It's a terrible idea, waiting for someone Jamie O'Hara to give a decision before, you know, before the game's allowed to go on, or Joey Barton's going to tell us how to referee a football match.
I agree with that.
But actually, if you do have the whole star chamber of divers on a Monday morning or a Tuesday morning, I would have an ex-pro in there and say,
I mean, obviously, Basuma got sent off for Spurs at the weekend. I've got no complaints.
Yeah.
He threw himself on the
floor. He threw himself on the floor. He'd been booked, hadn't he? Yeah. It's stupid, isn't
but
it?
But if that hadn't been seen,
yeah,
I should step in and go, I don't care if he's been booked or not, he's tried to con you.
Yes.
Second yellow. Mm. And so I just want to see that eradicated. It's ridiculous. It's comical. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And you do think that how can you do
it's
that?
It's embarrassing for football, isn't it? As football fans and as a footballer, you try, I love the game, you defend the game. And then some of the behaviour, though, is just ridiculous, isn't it?
And the player should be embarrassed publicly. Yeah. That would stop it, because they won't want to be seen as, oh, he's done it again. He didn't learn his lesson the last time. In the past, when there was no VAR, when there was not a million cameras at a football match, there was a possibility of gaining advantage by feigning contact, feigning an injury, trying to get an opponent booked. But now there's no escape.
There's a VAR element of that, though, isn't it? Because his thought process there is, I'll make it look... Because sometimes a little bit of contact, then when you show it on the slow-mo, the VAR, his arm did catch him. And we're saying it in commentary, aren't we? Oh, his arm did catch him in the face. And you
contact.
Think, and you think, well, but honestly, it was probably quite a nice touch on the face. It was the gentlest touch on his face, and he's down on the floor. So that's what Cahill's thinking there, isn't he? He's thinking it'll look
and
like
also,
his elbow.
I don't know about you, but every goal that's scored now that I'm watching a game of football, my first instinct is it going to be allowed?
Yeah.
Every goal.
You need to watch more in the Championship, Terry, because actually a goal hits the back of the net, and you think...
And it's a goal.
It's a goal.
And that's my first instinct now, because there might not be something obvious, but they're finding it. They're finding ways to disallow goals. Yeah. And it is difficult when... literally every single game I watch live or working on or sitting at home watching on telly, my immediate reaction is it a goal?
Yeah.
And that's... I don't know, that VAR shouldn't have introduced that feeling of emotion that, oh, let's wait and see.
Yeah.
Don't celebrate too early.
Yeah, we've got more to come on VAR, don't you worry. Shall we go to Real Madrid's emphatic victory against Osasuna? Osasuna struggling a bit at the moment, but we'll sort of brush on their bit. We need to talk about Jude Bellingham yet again, Terry. For anyone who's wondering, I was wanging on about Ben Brereton Diaz, by the way, who's the other Midlander who's come to La Liga. Not made quite the same splash that Jude has made. Born for the Bernabeu, I think Vinny said after the game. I was going to say, what more can we say about him? But you've actually sat down and studied him properly. So, say something.
Yeah, because it's we can't just keep saying, oh, it's brilliant, he's fantastic, he's done this. But there has to be reasons why. So, first of all, I looked at his goal-scoring stats over previous years. Now, we're talking about 20-year-olds, so there aren't many of them, but for a 20-year-old, there is a good total. So, in his first season at Birmingham, he got 4 in 44.
Yeah.
Now, that's he was 16 at the time. Then he goes to Dortmund and he gets 4 in 46. And no real sign there that maybe he's going to blossom into an attacking midfielder that's prolific. His second season, he got 6 in 44. So a slight improvement because he's gone from 16, 17, 18, 19. Last season, he got 14.
Mm.
So there was a sign. That's quite a significant jump from 6 to 14 in 42 games, which then leaves you to believe that's a progression that either the club realised or he realised. Now he's exploded into 10 in 10 for Real Madrid, and he's made 3 goals as well. So in 10 games, he's scored 10 goals and made 3 goals, and it's extraordinary. But perhaps there has been, I mean, even with England, he's only got 2 goals. So on those 10 that he scored for Real Madrid, you can add the one against Scotland as well. So it's almost like a progression of how he's developing as a young player, which is all I ever hope to see. When you see young players break into a team, whether it's Real Madrid, Birmingham or Dortmund or Barcelona, Seville, anybody, you want to see a progression that they're not the finished article at 19 or 20 or 21. You want to see, and I see it from Gavi and players like that that are extraordinary, you know, playing out their skin for young players. Lamine Yamal, we're going to have to watch that. If the progression continues in the same way as some of these other younger players, it's going to be a hell of a player. So Bellingham has shown a progression in terms of how he's suddenly realised, you know, instead of playing safe, maybe he's developed into a player that likes to attack, that's prepared to gamble and anticipate attacking situations. Because he showed last season, when you look at that, from 6 to 14 in one jump, it's quite a jump for a midfield player, a young midfield player. Then I looked at the positional play, because I'm thinking, how does he keep getting into this area where he's finishing like a Benzema? I mean, he's covering up Benzema's, the loss of goals from Benzema. So, and how does he keep getting into that? I tried to look to see exactly where he was playing. And also have a look at how Real Madrid is setting up, because we spoke about the narrative has been that, you know, Vinny and Rodrigo are going to be up front, Bellingham going to be playing in behind. Then we saw Modric come back into the team yesterday and was absolutely extraordinary. His performance on Saturday against Osasuna, I suggested, because I watched it yesterday. His performance was extraordinary, Modric. I mean, it just was incredible. But then when you look at the position of play, I've been watching the game and thinking, well, Vinicius isn't playing centre-forward. Yeah. He's playing wide left still.
Yeah.
He does creep, he does drift into centre forward, but that's where he played anyway.
Yeah.
He didn't exclusively stay wide when Benzema was up front and there was another right sided attacking player. So he's still pretty much playing on the left. And what I found interesting was Carvajal is pushed on there, number two, but there are lots of times in the game where Carvajal is the third attacking player ahead of Valverde playing. Whilst Real Madrid had possession, he's playing in a front three. And it's not a right back playing there. He's playing as a right winger in a front three. He's pointing to Valverde, who's covering him and stuff like that. So there's good understanding between those two there. Modric was playing central midfield. Camavinga was central midfield. Mondi is your classic left back. He pushes forward in support rather than really bombing them. But then you have Bellingham and Vinicius, as you can see, playing down the left.
Yeah.
So it's a really lopsided Real Madrid with not a lot of balance in terms of the structure of the starting lineup. But they do really, down that left side, not so much Mondi. And it'd be interesting to see when I look here, when it's Fran Garcia or maybe Camavinga. That's the problem that Philip was talking about. If they play that against Barcelona, which they will, there's no reason to move Bellingham and there's no reason to move Vinicius. So they can be really strong down that left flank. So it's going to need some proper defenders there from Barcelona to try and pick that up. Now, where Bellingham is, he understands when he can make those runs into the box, and he understands the weakness of opponents now, which is all too familiar. Midfield players don't track midfield runners anymore. There used to be a time where you played, if it was 3-against-3 in midfield or 4-4-2 with 2-against-2 in midfield, that was your comp. That was your duel. You marked that player. He marked you. You went up and down in straight lines, and that would be applying a midfield three. But now you see, 4-2-3-1, 4-3-1-2 and different formations. And there's a lack of understanding from midfield players in general now of who their player is to track and to mark. And Bellingham has realised that. And he's realised if he starts in that position and he's in between two midfield players, perhaps neither of them will track his run. Because his 2 goals at the weekend, when he scores them, no one's near him. Literally no one is near him. And you're thinking, hang on, this is a player that going into this game has clearly showed to everybody what a talent he is and where he's going to play and how he's going to score, and no one's doing anything about it. No one's tracking him. You know, it's unforgivable to see modern-day football midfield players not tracking people, and Bellingham still allowing Bellingham to run into a penalty box unopposed, get on the end of a pass from Danny Carvajal for the first goal. The second goal was very similar as well. Decent build-up play. Astonishing how he just drifts in. But it's what he's doing there. The reasons of what, you know, because that's the position he's playing, and his mentality in terms of I can make these runs, and there's a fair chance midfield players are going to switch off. Midfield players are lazy. Midfield players don't want those defensive duties. It's hard for defenders to pick him up because they've got other responsibilities. Two centre backs, for instance, are looking at Hosseini in this game. So he's making the most of, you know, a modern day trend where midfield players don't see it as a personal duel between them and their opponent. And he's, you know, when he gets those opportunities, he hasn't missed. And that's the extraordinary thing. I mean, he's scored 10 in 10. He's made another three. It's ridiculous stats. And I can't remember him missing an opportunity. And I go back to the first game of the season at Athletic Club. You're thinking, how's he going to do in this game? This is a tough old fixture for Real Madrid. He cruised for that, scored a goal, and think, well, great start. This start he's had now, it's obscene. It's insane. It's off the scale. It's like all those players that have played for Real Madrid in the past and, you know, their grand total of goals. He's done 10 in 10.
Yeah.
And made three goals. And he's 20 years old.
Here's another one for you, Terry.
It's astonishing.
For the stats. Anorak's out there. Best finishing in La Liga this season. It is no surprise. Bellingham's top. So, I mean, a lot of his goals have been in positional goals, in a sense, haven't they? Like you say, exploiting weaknesses in the other team. But having said that, he's plus four on where he should be, according to the XG, which is a lot for this stage of the season. Takekubo's up there. Abdon Prats. Brian, the aforementioned Brian Zaragoza is up there. And Javi Guerra, we'll get to him later. I guess he gave that a boost this weekend. And then William Jose, for example. So because a long-range shot could appear in here and gives you a massive boost over. But Bellingham, you know, to have eight goals and 21 shots and a massive plus.
Incredible.
In terms of his...
absolutely awesome what he's doing. Yeah. There's no fear of failure as well because you're that age. You go into it without realising the enormity of what you're taking on.
I was scared of stuff.
Go and enjoy it.
When I was 20, I was scared of stuff. He's got something, hasn't he? He's got a rare confidence in him, hasn't he? Well, but that's why you're a footballer, and I wasn't.
I was probably about 22, 23 when you start worrying about the consequences of losing games, managers getting the sack, and life become a little bit more serious and cynical. But as a kid, it was just, you're having the fun of your life, you're doing what you dream of doing, and you miss a chance and that you'll score the next one, you lose a game, you'll win the next one, it's stuff like that. But then suddenly relegation and it becomes a bit more serious. But what he's doing now is absolutely astonishing. It's going to be interesting to see how Gareth Southgate plays him, handles him, where he plays him.
Left back.
Because the two in 26 goals, two goals in 26 for England doesn't, it's not, that doesn't work out. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. You know, if he can replicate, I don't know how long we can keep saying he can't keep this up for, but if he can replicate something along the lines that we've now clearly seen that, you know, he scored against Scotland, so maybe Southgate's realised it, that maybe the position he was playing in for England wasn't his best role. And if you have him and you have Harry Kane and then some of the other talented players, he should have a chance.
To be fair to Southgate, I mean, I mean the criticism that he's over-defensive given England's capabilities. But Bellingham has played further forward for England than he started as, like in that double pivot at the back, didn't he? And he's allowed him to move forward. So he's not totally against allowing players to attack occasionally, but, you know. Right, you mentioned the responsibility of getting managers the sack. I'm not saying that Fernando got Mendilibar the sack because I think, like you, that Sevilla seemed to be just ready, sitting there with the hand on the lever for the trapdoor for him, for the guy, you know, who came in, saved them from relegation, won the Europa League, And now they've sacked him after a 2-2 draw with Rayo Vallecano. They got a draw in the Champions League as well. So the 95th minute goal from En-Nesyri, goalkeeper's up and all of that. But obviously, it's the man with the trampoline legs who scores the goal.
Why doesn't score four every week? I don't know. Why Sevilla don't put every corner higher than what Rakitic did for 99% of that match? He kept hitting the near post, kept hitting it just about head high with someone defending it at the beginning of the 6-yard box, heading it clear. The second, the minute he puts, hangs one up higher enough, and then Nesyri gets the run right, a brilliant header. It's just so frustrating watching En-Nesyri because he doesn't take up the best positions. He doesn't get the best service that should suit him. But as you said, Trempoli is an incredible leaper in terms of aerial ability. And he's decent, technically good with the ball when he's heading it as well. So
yeah.
They deserve the draw.
Hit and miss otherwise, isn't it? Anyway, not En-Nesyri, but Mendilibar. So I think it's harsh. It's not a surprise because we've heard about the possibility of them sacking him. And every time I've heard about that, I read or heard someone talking about the sacking, I'm thinking, really? Just won the Europa League?
Yeah. I didn't take it serious. I agree with you. I really didn't, because in the last three or four games, I've seen an improvement from Sevilla. They were poor in the first half the other night, really poor, which led to him making the change when they were 2-0 down after 35 minutes. I saw why he made... Why wait until half-time? And at that stage, it could have gone 3-0 down, because every time Rayo attacked, looked like it was going to be a goal. So why wait until half-time to make that change? And I know it was tough on Fernando, but he shouldn't have taken it personally, because he's taken off a defensive midfielder and put it on a creative midfielder when you're 2-0 down after... Well, he took him off after 35 minutes. So don't think the reason for taking off was your rubbish and you're playing rubbish and you're the reason we're losing 2-0.
Yeah.
It would be tough for Fernando to take, but the way he pointed his finger at him and shook his finger at him and then made sure the crowd saw it and then walked down the tunnel, it wasn't a good look for a player of his experience and quality. He should know how to behave better than that. So I wasn't even aware that Mendilibar was under pressure. And I didn't even think after this result he was going to be under pressure. Villarreal, Pochettino, maybe, but not. I didn't think that Mendilibar. There was a big debate in the summer whether he should keep the job, despite the fact he got them up the table, away from relegation, and won the Europa League. It was a big debate on, does he have the right profile for Sevilla? Because he's a manager that's managed other clubs, but that was his first crack at a genuine big club. And he led them to success in the Europa League. So congratulate him on that, because when he took over, they were a basket case under Sampaoli. It was an absolute mess. And there was a danger they could get relegated. It seems weird saying it now, but they were in trouble. And was he fashionable enough for Sevilla long-term? That was the question hanging over the dinosaur, so-called dinosaur, Mendilibar. Didn't help his calls early in the season when he had one of those drinks break team talks, and he was telling the players we're not winning enough knockdowns, when maybe the criticism of Sevilla might be that they were going too direct in that game. And he was moaning at Rakitic and maybe Fernando, I don't know who it was. You're not winning enough knockdowns in midfield. That's not their game, is it, Rakitic and Fernando? It probably shouldn't be the game of Sevilla, but I think he came under criticism for that. And when you're that type of profile that Mendilibar's got, if people want to dig you out, you can't give them excuses. You've got to try and go along and play the game and pretend you're one of these modern managers, when what they needed was him, wasn't it? After Sampaoli, who's a modern manager, when it was an absolute disaster, they needed an old-fashioned manager with old-school fundamentals to put them on the straight and narrow, to get them firing again. And he did that, and they won the Europa League. But if they didn't feel he was the manager, they should have done it then. They should have done it then and said, you were the caretaker. But we don't see this. Rather than
it's brave,
that, about,
though, isn't it? It's brave.
That's what their job is. That's what their job is.
Yeah, and they would. I would have criticised that, because I'm criticising it now. But in a sense, if you think that's the long term, you've got to not worry about people like us, haven't you? And sack him.
That's why they've got these jobs. You know, if you're a director of football, that's why you've got this job. You've got to have a plan in place.
You've got to see something we're not seeing.
If Mendilibar isn't going to be that man, make that change.
Yeah.
You know, give him the payoff. He's won the Europa League, and we won't be talking about Mendilibar now if someone else had taken over Sevilla. We wouldn't be sitting there unless they were struggling again.
If they were this point, that's the problem, though. You put a lot of pressure on the guy coming in, because if they were this point in the league, we'd be saying, well, hang on, they sacked the guy who won the Europa League, they'd be sixth or whatever.
It's very similar to Villarreal. Kike Setién was going to lose his job.
Yeah.
They weren't convinced, but he got them into the Europa League.
Mm.
And they had a marvellous run at the end of the season, thanks to Nicholas Jackson. And it was common knowledge that Villarreal didn't want him.
Mm.
But they felt obliged to give him another crack at it, and then they sack him, and then the next appointment is a disaster. So I do feel for Mendilibar, but I think he's had a great little period at Sevilla. Yeah.
So
that's got him his first trophy in his long career as a coach. He's had a crack at it. He looked to me like he could handle it, I have to be honest.
Yeah.
Managing a big club, I'm not saying he's going to get another big job, but I thought he looked authoritative. Comfortable managing Sevilla, and I thought they were on the road to improving.
Yeah, but he can't come back.
Probably wrong in the first half of this match.
Can't come back this year, can he? Because
not in La Liga.
Not in La Liga. Of course, he got a Saudi and had a load of money or something, couldn't he? That's because he's got some profile now, hasn't he? Because of the Europa League win and this harsh sacking of it. Sometimes it does good for your career getting a harsh sacking, doesn't it? Because
sometimes
people, it kills your career being kept on and being seen to really fail and fail and fail. Yeah.
Yep.
So where do they go? They'll go for a quotes fashionable manager.
Do you say Lopetegui and Marcelino available? We both had a crack at it in the past. Would you go back to Lopetegui? I don't know, isn't it?
It's not long since he was there. I know. Through a few managers, and he's been through a job since. But it was not many months that he was there.
No, and by the time he left, the crowd had enough. The supporters had enough. So it'd be interesting to see what Victor Orta, the new director of football, if he has the power. Of course, that's, you know, we should believe the director of football does have the power. It's a weird little club, Sevilla, at the moment, though, how it's being run. But I thought it was a tough start for Mendilibar because it was a mess in terms of the transfers. They wanted players out, they couldn't sell players, they couldn't bring players in. And very similar to Barcelona, where after the transfer window closed, you looked and thought, actually, they've pulled it off. They've done some good business here.
Yeah.
You know, they brought in three or four players that will have brought the age of the group down, and the quality is there. So, and Luca Bacchio in particular, we haven't seen enough of Mariano Diaz, and Sergio Ramos, I think, is a great addition. So, I thought they were going to settle down. And my last podcast, I said, is it out of the question? After seeing them play at Barcelona, is it out of the question they finish top four? Because I could see signs that, hang on, this Sevilla is going to be a, not a force to be reckoned with, but they're going to be top seven this season, and even with Mendilibar as manager. So I've no idea where they're going now. I really don't.
Hmm.
In terms of the profile, in terms of how they want to play, they come from Lopetegui, who wasn't the most expansive of coaches. Mendilibar kind of was sick. Then to Sampaoli, who was all over the place.
Yeah.
To Mendilibar, which is more like Lopetegui. So I'm looking at what style of manager they want. One that plays football the way people believe it should be, or one that is pragmatic, one that wins things, ones that gets a bit of everything in. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go.
Where should we go? Should we go Celta Vigo next? I know we've got to do Atleti, but so they got a 2-2 draw against Getafe. We for you know the whole podcast audio, we haven't discussed last Monday's game when they lost to Las Palmas. That was the one where he was moaning about the VAR, wasn't it? And I mean, I can't review every single VAR decision. I thought the VAR had a point. I thought it was a foul in the build up to the non goal. Bit of shirt pulling going
on. I didn't.
On. Do you not?
I thought both. Right. Yeah, but I was just centre forward with my back to goal with someone trying to get close, and you use your body to roll them. I think they both had a grab at his shirt.
I thought he had loads of his shirt and floored him to allow Strand Larsen the channel to run through. That's possibly why I would have.
Don't get so tired, my argument as a defender. Yeah. What are you doing getting that close? Poor defensive play, and you're getting that close. And he had a bit of his shirt as well. So I thought that maybe was a little bit harsh, but it wasn't the reason they lost to Las Palmas. I mean, an incredible week for Las Palmas.
Yes.
I might have said to you off air, might be on there. They're nailed on to get relegated. I haven't changed my mind.
Yeah.
But in a week, 6 points, and they've flown up the table, and certainly life is looking to play like they want to. You need confidence, and this is going to give them a confidence boost.
Yeah. So they beat Villarreal by 2-1. Celta Vigo, 2-2 against Getafe. How bad are they? And it was against, you know, 10 men for 60 odd minutes of this game, wasn't it? They conceded early, they equalised, Getafe had a man sent off, then Greenwood scored, and then they get it back to 2-2. Aspas misses a penalty in that as well. So yeah, what state has Rafa got Celta Vigo in?
A little bit of a state, actually. We look at the points picked up in the last few games up in Les Palmas last week, Getafe at home. I think it was Alaves before that when I was out there covering the games. They're games that you have to be winning. Is it five home games? No one yet. It's. I don't think he'll get fired. I can't see that. Because I think they desperately want him to succeed. The squad isn't great, I have to be honest, but it's far better than what they're showing at the moment. Yeah. Strand Larson's good. He gives you a platform to build, and Aspas is in and out of the team. Jonathan Bamba has been hot and cold, if I'm being honest, at the moment. Las Palmas, he was awful, looked good against Getafe. To be those three fixtures and then get a couple of points and to be playing Getafe down to 10 men and concede a goal. 30 minutes, Domingos Duarte got his second yellow.
Yeah.
So that's a long period in a home game to be only get a point. So it's tough going at the moment for Celta.
Yeah, 20-odd shots, 75% of possession, and lose the game. No, didn't draw. Drew the game.
Yeah.
Get it right.
Another draw.
Yes. So Atleti beat Real Sociedad by 2-1. This another one with a critical handball in this one, wasn't it? So Lino scored, Athabal got an equaliser, and the 88th minute where it finally goes in. Is this one a penalty?
I think it is. There was two big calls, wasn't there? The Morata one, where he handballs it, which is deflected immediately in front of him, and it brushes his hand as he's trying to attempt to sort of jump and mark someone. I kind of... That would have been a harsh one, but we've seen them given. And, you know, if it does strike the hand, brush the hand, we've seen them given. But I kind of think they got that right because it was such... The deflection was immediately in front of him.
Yeah.
There wasn't any intention. The arm wasn't outstretched. But it does brush the hand, brush the fingers. The second one, which is the decisive one, which wins the game for Atleti, is, I think it's a penalty. And it's harsh, incredibly harsh. But my thought process beyond that is it's travelling towards goal. I think Ramiro probably makes the save. But if it's goal-bound and you're on the floor and you're trying to get up and it strikes your arm, I think you're going to be lucky to get away with that one.
I think, crucially, he is not using his arm to balance himself or is falling. He's down and his arm then raises. And his arm's not part of the getting up process, is it? Because they quite rightly, I think they don't give it for that. If you just fall then over and it hits you, no penalty. But his arm is then a bit raised and a bit away from his body.
Yeah.
And it's harsh because, again, he's a bit disorientated because he falls the wrong way initially, doesn't he? He took in the wrong direction. And then as he gets up, his arms are, you know, away from his body. Anyway, how did Atleti play?
I thought Real Sociedad were a better team.
Right, yeah.
They're playing really well at the moment, I have to say. And Atleti were all right. It wasn't one of their best games. But I look at the starting 11, I'm quite pleased to see players coming back. Savic come on yesterday, from injury. Rodrigo de Paul was able to play, that allowed Saul to rest. I look at the rest of the team and I'm thinking, this is the same players being rolled out game after game after game. And this was one of those games where it was a really tough opponent, really good opponent. Samuelino is an interesting player. He's really, really good. But he's been hot and cold lately. But this period of him playing all these games since he started against Real Madrid has led to him, you know, showing confidence and belief and looked like he feels like he actually belongs at Atleti now. And he's a real asset to them. He gets the first goal. Great run over the top. Great ball from Koke. And I thought they grind out. They had to grind out of this win because Real Sociedad are good opponents. And Atleti, the same players, keep going and going. There's a bit of fatigue involved in their performance. But in general, as I say, De Paul was back. Savic was back. They've got the international break. If you can get two or three more players back, I think they've done remarkably well under those circumstances. Keep rolling out the same group of players, game after game in the last 2 or 3 weeks when the games have been every 3 days. I think it was a really good result, an okay performance, but great mentality from Atleti to get all 3 points. And pressure, Griezmann. And that we can't forget, you used to play for La Real. It seems a long time ago.
Got 8 goals against them, I think.
Since he left. You know, pressure against taking the penalty in the last minute of the game when you know Real Madrid have won. You're probably looking at it and thinking Barcelona are going to beat Granada tonight. We don't want to drop off the pace. We've got this game in hand against Sevilla and blah, blah, blah. But so really important win for Atletico. And tough one. It was tough. What I would mention is we talk about Takekubo this season a lot. Rightly so. He's, you know, Bellingham, Takekubo, without even thinking, have been the two best players in La Liga. But Oyarzabal, the last 2 or 3 games, is showing a sign now that he's back to the old Oyarzabal pre-ACL injury. And he's a super player, and he was instrumental in it. And it's been a good little period again for Real Sociedad.
So Girona won by a goal to nil away at Cadiz. It helped that they played against 10 men for 80-odd minutes of this game. A red card, so for Darwin Machis in the 9th minute. So as I said, you know, it's a bit of a ref watch going on today. What about that one? Was he right to be sent off?
He slips, doesn't he? I'm confused as to why the studs were so high, though. It's a lunge, isn't it?
When yeah,
he doesn't
it is
need
a weird
to be making
one.
That tackle.
Yeah.
And his straight leg and his studs are showing. There's an element of a slip in it, but I get the slip might make you crash into someone accidentally, but why were the studs and the leg so high and straight?
Yeah.
He catches his opponent on the hand, doesn't he, rather than the leg.
Yeah.
Probably one of those the referee could have given. Know your players as well. Dime Machis hasn't kicked anyone since he's been playing in La Liga. So that made it even more confusing, didn't it?
But that doesn't give you the whole he's not that sort of lad thing. If he did it, he did it, didn't he? I guess I sent him off for being reckless, because it is reckless, isn't it? But I know he has the little stumble. Yeah. But like, as you say, his foot is there, and his
leg was straight as well.
Yeah, and it could have done the damage.
Yeah.
So it sort of put yourself in a zone. It'd be probably one for the referee training manuals, isn't it? To be fair.
Yeah.
Because it's the sort of one where we demand consistency of referees, but it's hard to be consistent because stuff happens.
Exactly.
You know, it's not one. The worst thing they could do is let David Ellery on charge of this and start trying to get a watertight definition. So if he stumbles a little bit and then his legs straighten and all of, you know, sometimes, you know, but a bit of bad luck in a sense, but also got no sympathy.
It's hard for a referee, same referee to be consistent in the same game.
Yeah, yeah.
You do often see things, well, he give that. Why isn't he given that? And you think, so how do you get all the referees to be consistent every week like they're robots? Mm-hmm. It's impossible.
Mm.
But it was a big call. Considering the time, 10 minutes.
The earliness of the game, isn't it? In the game. So and then Girona, obviously, sort of dominate and
Felix Garcia as well. And
we're at the October break, and they're in the second position. Race.
Above Barcelona. It's an incredible start and bounce back from the defeat against Real Madrid. It didn't have to, I mean, that helps by the fact they're playing against 10 and they're playing against a team that. They're strong at home, Cadiz. They get their points at home normally. So it's another very good win for Girona and Michel's team.
Yeah, Athletic also a good win, convincingly, against Almeria Friday night. Well, Danny Garcia scored, I think, 6 years. I think I heard the commentator
say. Well, you know how he scores, don't you? He runs into the penalty box and no one's tracking him.
For the first time in 6 years, he made a run into the box.
Exactly. Danny, the penny's dropped. Just keep doing that, mate. But he's one of those that does track people back.
Mm.
And now the penny will drop and he'll go, oh, so not every midfield player plays like me.
Yeah.
I might, if I run in the box, now someone might not run back with me. And that's what it was. They were dominating this game. It could have been more. And a good recovery after the dropping against La Real the week before. And they came back, and Sunset is so key to them. He scores the last goal. He's key to everything they do. He links between midfield and attack. He's taken on that role that Mignon is going to find hard to get a game now, because if you want that key player to be decisive in that attacking midfield number 10 role, Sunset is a star for Athletic Club.
Gaetska Garitano is the Almeria manager now. Not, we'll see how he gets on.
Yep.
Experienced manager, he's had his ups and downs, good spells and stuff. So, we'll see. Good luck to him. And then two more games to do. Alaves versus Betis. Yet another red card. A freak goal in this, isn't it? The Bellerin own goal.
Yeah. It's quite funny. I know I shouldn't laugh, but the close-up, when it hits the bar and comes back and hits him, his facial expressions, and he goes, oh, you can see it. As it's coming to hit him, he's nothing he can do about it.
Was it the part? I thought it was Claudio Bravo.
Bravo, he pushes it
at him, doesn't he? He's the own goalkeeper.
It's like a slow motion, watching a car crash. And it was in it went. But I think Alaves are a decent team. Struggling to get points. I mean, they're in that pack. A lot of teams on 8 points. So you go Milka and Sevilla and Villarreal and Alaves. Celta have got 6. It's quite crowded up down the bottom of the table there. I think Alaves are decent. I think it's a tough little game for Betis. And William Jose, late red card. But obviously Perez with a decent goal. And I don't think it's a bad result for either team. Betis on the back of the Europa League as well. Not an easy trip. And it wasn't a disaster, that result.
Yeah. See if I can find it. The red card count among the big five leagues. We were saying, weren't we, that La Liga had given up its advantage, but I'm going to say not now. I'm going to see if I can find it for.
Yeah, it's creeping back in, isn't it?
Yeah.
Winning Joe today in this one. Domingos Duarte's one was harsh. We talked about Darwin Matthews. It's going to creep. And I noticed the foul count. I'm presuming that's gone up because I'm seeing more games this weekend where the referees are stopping it, and you're thinking, that's not a foul.
Stop
giving those fouls, but they're not fouls.
Yeah.
There's nothing going on.
And they weren't at the start of the season. So red cards.
No, I think so.
Big five leagues combined are Liverpool 4, Cadiz, Getafe, Osasuna, Villarreal, Wolves, all on 3. So, and then fouls, you want fouls. So the most fouling teams are... I'll share this one with you. Basically, a long, long list of La Liga teams, most fouls in the league. Yeah. So there we are. That's it there for Patreon. So Getafe, unsurprisingly, look at Getafe, are going to win this. 44 yellow cards. The next highest in anywhere is 30.
So that can't be right. 10 of the 11.
Yeah. For yellow cards, this is, yeah. So this is all the five,
that
the big
can't
five
be right.
Leagues.
Yeah, that can't be right. So my point is, you do a couple of those fouls where they're not even fouls. You're going to get a yellow card. You're going to give away free kicks. It stops the game for 10, 20, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And so I noticed this weekend, I thought it was a big difference this weekend. The way the referee...
So 10 of the first 11 are in the fouls. This is the fouls count. So it's Getafe, Mallorca, Rayo, Real Sociedad, Cadiz, Alaves, Villarreal, Girona, and then Monaco, Athletic, Granada. So 10 of the first 11. And in the top 16, they are all... So a few French clubs.
French and Spanish. Yeah.
And then the yellow cards. Sorry about yellow cards. Getafe are miles out in front. Getafe, Mallorca, Tottenham, Villarreal, Rayo, Cadiz. Wolves are the most cynical of the English clubs, it would seem. Thrown in there, but yellow cards, more Premier League yellow cards, so not so many fouls, more yellow cards, lots of fouls in France. Do you want to see tackles won? Who wins a tackle? Mallorca, top tackling team. One more game to do, Terry, that we haven't mentioned. Mallorca versus Valencia. Oh, the super header, wasn't it, from Diego Lopez? Yeah,
ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, and good goal from Danny Rodriguez as well.
Yeah,
super goal from Diego Lopez. The young players, they're doing all right. It's a tough game, Mallorca away, for young Valencia, and that's a good result. I love the free kick from Sal Coco. We talked about Las Palmas and VRL. What a free kick that was, by the way. No wonder the goalkeeper didn't save that.
Yeah.
And Gerard Moreno, so he's replying in the 92nd minute. What a goal that was. So there were some cracking goals this week, but... the header from Diego Lopez was a super header.
There we are. Right, thank you for your support, everybody, particularly the Patreons, particularly anyone who's still listening. I've seen podcast of listening curves. By the end, no one's listening. So, but anyway, anyone's left, we love you. And join us on Patreon, patreon.com/LTEL. And Patreons, get some questions to us. We will do something over the international break. And we might share an old podcast with everybody next week. So we hopefully you'll enjoy that. And we'll see you all for more live action. Patreons, keep in touch. And we'll see you all soon. Thanks for your support.